Yeah, I'm sorry to my earlier colleagues. As usual, sometimes you're given double duty in the environment section was same time. But anyway, I'm also going to try to just talk up because I don't want to break my back leading into this thing. So what I'm going to talk about today, as you'll see, is roughly one half of a project. We're calling it a pilot study because of the resources that the funding allowed and the sample size at a school level. But someone before asked about attendance, tardiness, leaving early, and the reasons. And I will highlight how the other parts of this community-based participatory project actually cover that. And if people are interested, maybe afterwards, I can share with you, because we presented that more of an epidemiology type of conference a couple of weeks ago in Pasadena and in Kansas City. Just gonna, do I have to use the keyboard here to move forward? Or
just the right? Click on the mouse.
Okay, yeah, so we have to show this. I'm going to try to stand away. So first, I like acknowledging all my colleagues, in part because this was a community-based participatory research project from the planning phase and then actually in the implementation. Certainly, there were key stakeholders. So first, all the graduate students that worked with me in Georgia, coming from different disciplines, particularly health behavior, health promotion, health education, and epidemiology. Of course, the local partners, which became the Board of Health, different people within population health and environmental health, and then the school district. In this school district, they have a specific Department of Research and Evaluation. And for those of you who work in schools, that means I went through two full IRBs successfully, but it was sort of one of those catch-22s, just for future note, that sometimes one expects the other to finish first, and it took me 6 months to convince them they have to do it at the same time, but I was successful. And then this actually started, the ideas for parts of this started when I was working in California. So for Jennifer and I, this is like a little reunion in the Central California area, where these were also emerging concerns because of the high prevalence of asthma morbidity. And so I had a chance to work and learn more about health policy with someone at Fresno State, and that initial funding helped plan the proposals that eventually got funded when I had to move to Georgia. So this is just a quick outline of the talk that I'm going to give today. You know, I'm a scientist and engineer who's made a point to learn more about health education because of the work I do now and what I did in the nonprofit sector. So I'm going to just give you a sense of how literacy fit into the basis for this project. Just a little bit about exposure assessment science, because that was the basis of this part of the project being enhancing the training of the nurses. And then the actual project itself, which ended up being conducted within metropolitan Atlanta. I know I put up the county and the school district before. I'm not going to name them again, and I'm not going to name any of the schools or individuals, because that's part of doing working in IRB approval. And then just summary conclusions about where the work went and finished up with the other aims. So first of all, now some people in the room are much more of an expert when it comes to literacy, but one of the things I had to learn in order to put these proposals together initially was how environmental health sciences literacy fit into the constructs of what we call general literacy and health literacy. Now, science literacy I ended up learning is separate, because at the K-12 level, you're talking more about biology, chemistry, physics, you know, college prep type of classes. But health literacy was really the area we wanted to enhance. And so environmental public health science, or EPHS literacy, was considered part of that. And it was really geared based on some policy statements by major organizations, SOFI being the Public Health Educators, and then now what's now called the National Environmental Ed Foundation, looking at training or enhancing the training of physicians and nurses. But at the time, most of the focus was on physicians, whether during school or in residency. And for nurses, it was really just the professionals working in hospitals. So school nurses were a niche that I personally felt needed to be filled, and so we tried to address it in that way for a lot of the reasons Jennifer mentioned before. First of all, just so everyone's on the same page, when I mention exposure later on, for those that are not like what we call maybe basic or hard scientists, exposure is if something was polluting the water bottle I have over there and I spilled it on my skin, that would be exposure, because it's contact between whatever agents are in the water with my skin, and then it can absorb into the body. But it's a broader definition, so I'm just putting it up here for reference. And in the training I'm going to tell you about later, we went into each of these in detail with examples using photos and realistic local level scenarios. We also want to just cover what types of indoor environments we're even talking about. Now, schools are an interesting kind of place, just like daycare, because one could argue they could fall into any of these, depending on the types of services available. And I underline the two probably come to mind most easily. Non-occupational, because the child is learning But occupational, of course, because all the adult staff, teachers, PE coaches, et cetera, this is their place of work. Most of you have heard the statistic, 1 out of 5 Americans spend their time in K-12 schools. Sometimes I wonder if it's not actually higher if you consider all the other sorts of services schools have become increasingly responsible for giving. So in my course at the graduate level, we call schools and daycare transitional because they overlap essentially all these categories, one could argue. So the methods of the project, and this is sort of a teaser slide, I admit, because I'm going to talk about the overall design, and I'm not going into the epidemiology portion because the purpose of the talk was to focus on the training. But what we did is the research was looking at getting participating consenting schools, which meant recruiting the principal. This is after IRB approvals. We did a probability sample, meaning of the 84 elementary schools in this district, broke them randomly into groups of 21 based on a randomization. We only had to recruit 2 groups. We got above our target after the first 2 groups, so of the 40 eligible, because unfortunately a few schools became K-3 for the next year, which we didn't know until we did recruitment, of those 40, we got 7. And of those 7, that represented a fairly high proportion of those that actually responded to our request in the spring of 07. We also were able to then include, instead of just randomly selecting 2 classrooms per grade per school, principals basically said, well, sometimes we think we might only have 2 classrooms. We might have 3, we might have 4. We won't know until the school year starts, because in Georgia, they had just started class size reduction. It was something Sonny Perdue, even though he's a Republican and sometimes Republicans don't get good feedback on education, he actually had some very strong educational measures, both at the K-12 and university level. So when we figured it out, we were like, you know what, if they'll agree, we're just gonna take all the classrooms and just let all the teachers get involved. And that's what we did. And so there were 2 to 4 classrooms per school. It was 21 in each grade across the 7 schools. And again, this is a teaser because I don't have the EPI presentation here today. We had different regions too. Like most of you are familiar in your own communities, there's a concern about health disparities. And traditionally, there's a STEPS grant in DeKalb County looking at health disparities in the 6 different areas. And it was thought that South was disproportionately burdened compared to North. So we actually looked at it that way, and then we did some other geographical distinctions based on where healthcare services were located, in addition to just basic geography of the county. And a long story short, we didn't see the same things they were, but we were also looking at a different age group and perhaps a probability sample versus what they were doing, which is more targeted. It was one of the largest districts in the country, and I told you basically the time frame before. So now we're going to skip to the actual aims that we're talking about today, which are 2 of the 4, which really related to, can we organize a training that targets school nurses, both the lead nurses for the district and the nurses and clinic assistants at the schools, and then what would the content of that be to incorporate clinical, behavioral, environmental management of asthma? Because in the past, a lot of these folks were only trained in clinical and some behavioral. So just for the purpose of the presentation for the next 15 minutes remaining, that's my definition of healthcare providers for this project. And the reason is, it's not, unfortunately, as Jennifer showed, like is the case in California, not every school has a nurse, but in this county and in several Georgia counties, each school had assigned at least a healthcare professional, as we're defining it here. And in this county, because of the STEPS grant that the federal government awarded to that health department, they were sometimes able to replace the clinic assistants or the licensed practical nurses with full RNs because they supplemented the funding that the district had budgeted, which is a nice thing. And I can't remember the exact numbers. If any of you know Robin Tanner, she would give you an update, but it was more than a dozen. It was, you know, a substantial number given there's only 84 schools. The other thing we did is we need some sort of evaluation. And we used surveys I'm gonna flash up in a few minutes, pre and post. Now, pre meant everyone got it along with the IRB consent form and the response letter for availability. We used the same ones post-intervention right at the end of the training for those that came. But in addition, new to this project, we created an environmental priority survey because as a new professor in Georgia, I ended up only staying there 2.5 years for family reasons, but as a new professor, I wanted to know beyond what the media covered, what were the school nurses and other school stakeholders' impressions of what the main concerns were. Everyone talks about traffic in Atlanta. People talk about different toxic air contaminants or soil contaminants depending on where they live because of the industries that have dominated. But there are other concerns indoors and outdoors. So we have this survey. And I'm just going to flash up very quickly. There were a lot of parts to this project. And one of the things I learned in my health policy fellowship is keep the number of moving parts to just a few. So we used validated surveys from previous studies looking at lower literacy populations. Now, of course, teachers and nurses have a fair level of literacy, but to keep it simple, we figured if these surveys were geared towards the eighth grade level, everyone was gonna be able to understand them, whether they were sent home or they were answered right at the end of the workshop. This is the one from Columbia that they used. This one's 15 items. It was already translated, English and Spanish. I can admit, though, even though we thought we would need both languages, most nurses are bilingual in this county. This was one of them. The other one was also true-false 23. This one came out of, for those of you that are familiar with the Chicago Asthma Coalition, they've done a lot of good work. They've partnered with the universities there and the local health departments. They were one of the inner-city asthma study sites. This was one of the questionnaires they used. If you're interested, both of these were available through the NIEHS Environmental Ed bank of resources, let's call it, online. And then finally, this is how the survey looked that we created for our project. It was one page. The idea was they could first check off what they were, a teacher, nurse, principal. Obviously, at one point, they were all nurses. And then for the randomly selected participating schools, it was one of the other three as well. And they went through these checklists, just checking off which ones were of concern to them, and then they circled the top three in each microenvironment category. And so I'm going to share with you some of the results from this one as well. So this is how, this was just the timeline. We also had to do a survey of availability. When you work with schools, CBPR type of work, you can't just hold these things and expect them to show up. But the limitation of this project for this specific aim was the IRB approval. Some people mentioned before, and Jennifer went into great detail, how successful they were with their trainings. Well, my limitation with our graduate students helping out was the IRB for the school district said you must hold the training in a 3-day period before the school year and before our 2 mandated union training days for teachers or nurses. So, okay, that was basically August 1st through 3rd. So we surveyed them. And we got August 1st as the clear majority. Now, we lost some people because of that. We did have our incentive, as you'll see in a few seconds. Target is a good incentive. It's also the only one our university approves for IRB, by the way, mainly because of the negative feelings towards Walmart at the time. But anyway, the results you see here at the bottom, we got all 4 lead nurses, which is 4 for 84 in the district, but they're also covering high schools and the like. These are your full RNs, most of them had master's degrees. And then we got 28 out of 80 of the healthcare providers to respond. But the reality is, when we limited it to August 1st, we got the lead nurse for the district, who was a strong collaborator from the planning stage as well, and 1 in 3 of those who responded. So you're going to see a small sample size in a second. We had to combine that for the priority survey with all the participating schools in the main study. So that was the main limitation. The only thing I can add at this point is that in October, when the lead nurses did a workshop for the nurses on just general education materials they had assimilated over the summer, because lead nurses in this district were more or less full-time staff, they brought the materials from our training and basically did, I don't want to call it a train-the-trainer, but they shared just what they had learned with us when I show you the agenda. So at least we got to reach out to all 84 that way. But this was a major IRB limitation. Georgia State did not require that. It was the district that did. So this was basically just the agenda, and obviously we're not going to go line by line. I highlighted in red just a few things. Red, I hope it shows up red in the back. It's red or burgundy here. Just to show it, we went from what they were more familiar with being the clinical, and we had one of my graduate students as part of this grant. She went to the workshop with me in Kansas City for the ALA Asthma Educator Institute, and then as a clinician, she went through and got her AAC before we did this training. Then we did the environmental asthma triggers. I had another graduate student who's a physician that took courses in Georgia State and got some experience presenting. And then we did these other things in small and then the larger group. And we wrapped it up during a typical school day, given they had to commute from where they were. These are the materials we gave them, of course, the favorite Target gift card. But, you know, we tried to make it so that they walked away with things, and the lead nurses got extra copies for what we found out was later on that other workshop. Not extra Target cards, though. Those went to the schools that participated in the main study. So I'm going to share with you some results, but since they're tabular, I figured I'd just give a few bullets to summarize. The next slide immediately is going to show the knowledge and awareness, or the immediate impact gains, from those that participate in the workshop and also submitted before In addition, every well system may be four and then couldn't come on August 1st because maybe they wanted the second or third. And even though there are going to be small sample sizes, which means no statistical significance test was practical, we can say a few things about one of them, and I'll just flip to that table now and point it out. If you look at one of the quizzes where you look at post-test versus pre-test, the means went up slightly, but for me, it's probably a matter of the sample size. The range became narrower. So obviously, I don't know which person where those four sit in this range, because we were looking at things in aggregate and removed identifiers, but the fact is the range became narrower, and all four of them on that quiz got sort of that above that 80%. The other quiz, you may remember, was longer. It was 23 items. And to be honest, we all felt there were a few tricky questions on that, and we're talking about graduate-level trained people. So that's showing at least some modest indication of an immediate impact of the training, just based on using previously validated quizzes. But of course, we can't test for statistical significance. But what we have more rich data on are the priority survey, which is why this is now part of a publication that's in review at Pediatric Nursing, is because not only did it work, meaning these people didn't confuse indoor and outdoor triggers. We tried to show that very briefly by putting stars in where they should have not had any response, and they did not. But if you look at schools, the top three are actually right at the top. Pollen, mold, and respiratory infection, but believe it or not, exercise and physical activity. This shows that in this district, given the STEPS program was present, that they're already aware of the importance of physical activity and the impact of air quality outdoors on physical activity. And that's why it says in or at school, because that microenvironment tried to say basically the school campus. Looking at home, no surprise, mold and the dust mites. And then outdoors, pollen, and then going down diesel-powered trucks, buses, etc. A lot of freeways, a lot of old state highways in Georgia that are now really would be considered primary roads here, maybe like PCH or Sepulveda out in Los Angeles. But now the next table is going to say, of those responses, which ones do they prioritize as top three? And again, we did this because if we were going to do a follow-up study, once we learned more about the main study schools and you did quantitative work, where would that go? Well, at school, mold and respiratory infections still ranked near the top, but not much farther away now from physical activity. So clearly there is going to be some sort of interdisciplinary comorbidity kind of work that would have to go on in this district. This has informed at least the STEPS program in terms of what they're thinking about doing with schools. For triggers in the home, nothing really changed, although dust mites remains the top one. And then for outdoor, pollen and diesel are still the top two, which again is no surprise. But you can get a sense of a fairly broad spread about people that actually respond to these different concerns. And certainly I'm not here to prioritize which one's more important than the other, given this small sample. But you can see that even though there's been a lot of work on getting rid of ETS and smoking in public places, even in Georgia, there's new laws that went into effect in 2006. And of course, there's no smoking on school sites, period. The fact of the matter is, why did 11.8% still name that both outdoors and indoors? I would think it's because maybe the enforcement of the laws in terms of how far away from open doors and windows is not there compared to what we see here in California. Even in New Jersey, I can say it's not quite there in terms of enforcement yet. So just to sort of wrap up, I think I'm on time, hopefully. Cool. All right, this is the second to last one besides just a thank you. So I think what this project overall showed, and looking forward to what the EPI portion showed, is that nurses or healthcare providers in general can contribute to comprehensive asthma management in schools. That's probably not new news for everyone here, but in the past, environmental health was not a main part of their prerogative in terms of asthma management. I think this project showed that not only can that be part, but they can be a source for raising awareness and knowledge of community environmental health issues, because they were seen in a lot of cases as the point people in these schools after the principal. And in addition to that, nurses tend to take on other sometimes administrative duties because of funding shortages. They find they're sort of multitasking just like everyone else in the room in public health. And finally, the whole reason for doing this project was in California, when I was there about a decade, we did a lot of indoor air quality and various types of engineering intervention studies. And we had one that looked at attendance and carbon dioxide as an indicator of ventilation, which is yet to be repeated except for some Dutch studies coming out next year. But we didn't know why they were absent. And so even though we found this really interesting relationship with inadequate ventilation, Why were they absent? And then the communities in California and the Central Valley said, well, yes, there's a financial reason for caring about attendance because it's linked to funding for supplemental activities, but what about tardiness and leaving early? They come in late, they leave early, all those classes get disrupted, and No Child Left Behind cares more about test scores when it comes to funding. So this entire project was trying to inform for those that are sort of interested in this sort of indoor air quality, health and productivity, and even performance work, if you start talking about the adults, could we track attendance and tardiness leaving early with reasons? And I know I'm not showing that data here because it was a separate project, but I think the answer is if you have training for the nurses and you can get IRB approval to do it for all of them at a more convenient time, they become major stakeholders in addition to the teachers and the principals who end up agreeing to participate. And so that's my hope, is maybe at some point there'll be funding for those kinds of studies available. So with that, I'll just finish and thank you. And this is my contact info, like everyone else put up. And if there's any questions, I guess we have like a minute, 2 minutes, something.
We have about 5 minutes for questions for
everybody, right?
For Derek and everyone else.
Hi, Derek, I wanted to ask you about the pesticides, just real briefly. I was just curious.
Can I go back on this? Probably not. All right, go ahead.
When you were looking at schools, in and at schools, people didn't sort of talk about pesticides. I mean, not even just application of pesticides on the plants and stuff sort of surrounding the school, but also like the raid that gets brought in and used.
Right. I can't pull up the slide. I can't remember if any of them. I know pesticides was listed for outdoor.
And so then the outdoor is like the outdoor spaces at the school?
Outdoor at the school would be on the campus. But I think the real answer to your question is, unlike California and other states, Georgia does not have the same kind of, to my knowledge, the same kind of notification laws at school sites. As you know, California, you know, in other states, there's notification for indoor-outdoor use. There's also restrictions. So where's pesticide use? What this also means is none of them checked it off. It was there. I mean, they weren't in.
Yeah.
But I also think they probably were thinking about indoor use. And you don't see much of that unless teachers are bringing in their own raid. But we weren't asking the teachers at first this thing. Now, even the teachers that answered didn't put that down. But you're right, from the other studies, we know that sometimes the products brought in by teachers for cleaning or pesticides are not as bad. But the notification laws that do exist in Georgia really relate to outdoors in the general community at parks. It's an interesting point, though. And that ranked fairly high. It wasn't the top two, but it's up there. It's probably three or four.
Any other questions for any of the presenters today?